For the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show. Back with me, Tim Fuel, and my marvellous co-host as the season really pops up. With much to get through, let's do some quick intros. Enjoying being back in the management hot seat down at Chertsey Town, but sparing us some time this evening. Good evening, Dave Anderson.
Good evening.
And sparing us some time in his very busy social life and commitment to other media outlets from FC United Radio. Good evening, Swampy.
Good evening, boys.
Now, chaps, are you excited about the end of the season? Dave, I say the end of the season. You've probably still got a handful of games left. Are you safe from relegation yet?
Yeah, I'd have to say probably not mathematically, but I think we're absolutely fine. The lads have done great, considering I didn't really have a side when I went in, but signed a lot of the players, chucked them together and hoped for the best. And it was one of, you know, them nights when you get home and there's nothing in the cupboard and you chuck it all in the same pan and it comes out all right.
When I was a student, that was called tuna surprise. The surprise was there was no tuna. Yeah.
Well, this was Chertsey surprise. but in all honesty, they've done great, the guys. I think we've won 3 and drawn 1 out of 6. If we win Saturday, it'll be 3 league wins in a row for the first time in certainly this season. I'm told it could be as many as 5 seasons, although I don't know that. But so yeah, delighted, really, really delighted with them, and I've nearly enjoyed it sometimes. You know, it's been okay, but so I would say outside of something really, really strange, we're fine, Tim.
And Swampy, operation safety complete for FC United. Last game at home, bottom of the table, North Ferriby. All eyes on next season already.
Yeah, well, it was we've secured our place in the division for another season. Tuesday night, we were lucky enough to try and retain our cup, the Manchester Premier Cup, and played Trafford, a very good Trafford, who were playing actually this evening in what would hopefully be them putting them into the playoffs. In 2 divisions below, we won that competition, so we finished safe, and we've also ended up with with the trophy, which is nice, and looking forward to a nice bit of relaxation, and then off to Salzburg, where FC United play their first pre-season game, which should be very nice.
What sort of pre-season is that? That's the sort of pre-season we all need to be going on.
Well, we tend to have them. You know, we've been very lucky through fan ownership and football clubs. We've been lucky enough to go to places like South Korea. We played Sao Paulo on their 100th anniversary. We've been over to Ireland playing Cliftonville. We've been pretty much everywhere within Europe, enjoying fan ownership and a nice post match. And it gives those players that have had a hard season the opportunity to relax and enjoy a game of football. At the same token, it's a good way of enticing new players, saying, look, if you want to join us, we've got this pre-season weekend over in Europe. And, we've got some good players out of it. And it's nice. And then they can go away for the month and come back. And then we play, we've got a couple of international friendlies at home in July, Winterthur being one from Switzerland. So, it's all good, all enjoyable. Could be worse. We could be going to Neymar. Or and Burma as Leeds United are. Well, so their pre-season tour.
Normally we have pre-season at home, and we normally have a new set of players by about the second week of the season. So,
but yeah, you've been doing well, Tim. You're in the playoffs, aren't you?
Well, yeah, I will. We'll mention that later, Dave. But we think we're in the play. Well, we are in the playoffs, but it's intriguing. It's intriguing. Yeah, but normally, I think even this season we probably. Certainly hit 60, I think, of player registrations. Normally the players that turn up for pre-season aren't always the ones you finish the season with. And if we have pre-season tours like Swampy's, I don't think we'd ever see any of them ever again. But well, should we crack on with some of the news of the week? More announcements this week of managers leaving their existing clubs at the end of this season. King's Lynn Town, Ian Culverhouse, has revealed his intention to step down at the Southern League Premier side over the summer amidst much interest from local football league clubs whilst the Linnets still have the playoffs to contend with. In the Southern Division 1 South West, Kidlington manager Julian McCalman, he's stepping down at the end of the season having secured a mid-table finish there. And in the Isthmian Premier, Johnson Hippolyte will be leaving Staines Town at the end of the season with owner Matthew Boone finalising a deal to transfer ownership of the club to new buyers. Darren Kilpatrick is leaving Bognor Regis Town after Saturday's game against Dartford. He spent 18 years at the club as player, manager and currently head coach. And elsewhere, Steve Burr, he's leaving Stalybridge Celtic with his contract not being renewed, having secured safety in the Northern Premier this season. And also, Jordan Hall has left Retford United in the Northern Counties East Division 1 following their relegation. Other news, well, we've got National League North playoff contenders Harrogate Town. They've had new stadium plans approved by the local authority. The scheme includes a new two-storey clubhouse and other community-focused buildings. Facilities and various stands will bring the capacity up from 2,800 to 5,000. And also, a quick mention, FC Halifax Town in the National League. Club captain Matthew Brown has signed a two-year contract extension. So it's a bit of a quiet week in terms of news, because we've discussed all the promotions, relegations and various other connotations, but it does seem to be this trend that, you know, managers announcing that they're leaving before the end of the season. Is that
To be fair, I never heard the word sacked once in that statement you made. Usually managers get sacked, but I don't know, leaving at the end of the season and announcing it before the end of the season, I'm old school. I'm surprised Drax has done that. I know Drax, and I must give him a ring and find out what the real story is, because that seems strange that he's walking away from Staines. He's done a good job there. But why do you announce it now? I certainly understand that, you know, if Steve Burr's been told he's not having his contract renewed, then that's a different situation. But for me, I mean, I stayed on a couple of games after I got the sack from Harrow to help them out. In the middle of the season to take a couple of games. I think that's different. That was for the benefit of the club at that particular time, who had been good to me and I thought had been fair with me. But I don't understand why you would make that statement with games to go. I just don't understand.
I mean, from a manager's perspective, what you said there, Dave, I could understand. But I think from a supporter's perspective, and also for the fact that virtually all these clubs are safe and have, you know, I have no problem going into the last game of the season. Fans are now made aware that they're going to be looking for new managers. Managers themselves know that other clubs are probably been asking about them maybe throughout the season. And now that they're safe, there's an opportunity to say, well, I can leave the club. I'm not having the contract renewed. I'm going to talk to other clubs. And everyone sort of like knows where they're going. I mean, if there's something to play for, and, you know, I can't see a manager coming out and saying that in advance, but I think all these managers have pretty much either been relegated or they've staved off relegation, and therefore it's not going to be a bigger deal as it would be.
It's a bit like working your notice, isn't it? It's a bit like, you know, when you leave normal jobs, you have to... Yeah. Serve your notice. It's a bit like that. Maybe I'm wrong. But... I mean, I'm not saying, you know, I'm just saying for me, it's something that, as Tim says, has become a trend. And I'm sort of going, it's not something that has happened many times to this degree over the years, you know?
Well, to be honest, I mean, there's a list of half a dozen other managers I know that have all done the same thing in the last week. They have announced either the retirement or they're leaving a club. You know, so it's not just these few. There's quite a plethora of managers this season, and there's a lot of managers that are out of work. So in that respect, you know, the merry-go-round continues, and it'll be interesting to see where managers, sort of like the ilk of Steve Burr, who's done a great job in securing safety for Stalybridge Celtic, because they were in dire straits for large parts of the season.
Yeah,
and he's managed to go on a really good. In fact, he's the run that they've gone on. His championship form. He's left him. He's very good pals with the chairman of the football club. I can see Steve Burr perhaps going and managing one of his older clubs that he's managed in the past. That's because of his experience. And I think a lot of these managers will be coming back into the game, and we'll see. We'll be talking to them, no doubt, next season at where the clubs are at.
Yeah, I'm interesting with the Culver House issue, because I believe it was really revealed in the non-league paper at the weekend, and the club weren't aware. I think they originally issued a statement saying they weren't particularly happy, because obviously they're still going into the playoffs, and you know they're seeing that as maybe a bit of an upset, and they've denied that there's been any approach from Cambridge United. There's plenty of clubs been in sniffing around it in Culver House, and you just wonder whether maybe he's just giving himself a bit of breathing space and makes it easier if if a chance from a football league club comes in? Do you think you know, as Swampy said, there's a lot of managers that are available.
Yeah, listen, I think you're being diplomatic. I think Ian Culverhouse most likely has a job and is stepping down because he's going to take it.
Is he going to? He's not going to Arsenal, is he?
Well, listen, all I would say is, why would you walk out in the playoffs?
Well, I think he's staying there. He's seeing the club through, but he's just saying that he's not going to be there, whatever happens.
And I don't know.
I have spoken to Ian because he was a great interviewee as well. When he had his head really screwed on.
Yeah, no, listen, I ain't doubting he's got his head screwed on. I'd like to ask him, why would you announce that to your dressing room when you're going to the playoffs? You know what? I'd like him to tell me why he feels that's the right thing to do. Unless it's the right thing to do for Ian Culverhouse, and then that's a different story.
Well, I mean, he might have had his hands forced, as we, you know, because that's actually came out, didn't it, in the paper. Perhaps the club didn't want to announce it until the playoffs were over. But when your hand is forced, he's had to come out and say this is the situation. And you know, when bigger clubs come a knocking, it's very hard to keep it under wraps, isn't it? You know, someone somewhere will leak it. I mean, I know the great run and Blythe Spartans this season have been absolutely outstanding. Well, then they went on the worst run possible in football. You know, I think they lost about 8 on the bounce. There was lots of talk of whether or not maybe a league club were coming in for the manager. And you saw the way the results went. So, you know, it's an interesting one when people come in and maybe tap you up or just destabilise a football club. What can happen? But in this instance, yeah, I understand, Dave. I'm sure he wouldn't have wanted everyone to know before the playoffs that he was leaving. Mm. I think the hand's been forced. I might be completely wrong, but I can't see it. You wouldn't do it. I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't announce to everybody. I'd want to win something and say, look, I've won this. Got a great opportunity here. I'm leaving. You've been great in great fettle in the new division, and I'm off to pastures new, and everyone's happy.
Yeah.
Well, we'd love to cover your club, of course, so get in touch if you've got a story. Get involved in the debate on Twitter at Non-League Show throughout the week. So let's get our first guest on. Another winner. Another manager who has seen his side crowned champions ahead of the final weekend. A great feat with much to celebrate, but quite possibly a feeling of relief more than celebration. Harry Wheeler, manager at Billericay Town, champions of the Isthmian League. Is that right?
Yeah, there was a big relief at the end of it. So it was a big moment on Tuesday night. It's nice to actually go to a game on Saturday and actually enjoy it.
Now, it was a brief introduction, Harry, because much has been spoken about in the media this season about Billericay, and I know the guys have probably got many questions to ask you here too. But to fill people in and to try and clarify, you were joint manager at Welling United, and then just before the end of last season, you left. You moved over to Billericay Town to become joint manager with Glenn Tamplin, the chairman and owner of the club. And since then, you've always been there, but Glenn's taken over, stepped back a couple of times, and now you are manager at Billericay Town Football Club. And that's for next season as well?
I'm contracted there next season. As you said, I was at St Albans and then moved over to go take it at Welling. And then just sort of, they came over and so I decided to go and took the opportunity. And, you know, this season it's paid off, but there's been a few ups and downs. It's changed a few times. And as it will be standing, yeah, I'll be the manager there next season.
And I wanted to get you on. We don't hear a lot about you, but I know people who know you very well, and they say you were really one of non-league's next managerial diamonds. Does that make you blush?
It's nice to hear. Do you know what? It's a cliche. I just keep doing my job, and even though I'm young, I've done it for a while now. That's my 11th season, and you know it's nice to hear. But you know that only proof comes if that actually comes to the fore. So all I can do is keep working hard, keep learning, and see what happens from there. Really.
Yeah, you say you're young now. I mean, you were the youngest person to gain your UEFA A licence. I think you were just 23 back then, so you know your stuff.
I just tried to do it early. It was one of them. I'm quite an honest person. It wasn't that I got an injury. I wasn't good enough to play. I played Conference South, but nothing higher. And, you know, I'm one of them that want to go to the top. And so I decided to stop playing early. Learn the side of the game early enough, because experience is better than any coaching badge or any other way you can do it. And decided to do that now rather than stop playing at 34, 35 and go, actually, I'm going to start learning it now and just try and get ahead of the game, really. That was sort of the view.
Dave, I think you've got a question.
Yeah, I've at least one, Harry. First of all, congratulations. It's no matter what people say about any club or any person within a club, it's not easy to win a league. And money, you know, yeah, people say you've had loads of money, me included, I say you've had loads of money, but it doesn't guarantee anything as well. So congratulations to you and everyone at the club. I'm interested in a couple of things. One would be the relationship with you and Glenn as to when Glenn's been in the dressing room and quoted as being the manager. What happened in it during that period? Was Glenn the leader, the pick the side, and you coached, or how did you go about that when Glenn was in the dressing room?
When we were doing it together, it was a good motivational person. In terms of tactical wise, that was through me. All the training sessions were done through me. And then I did a lot of my homework. I'm one of them. I like to be meticulous and find out who we're playing. And I don't really just say we'll play this side. It depends, you know, what their strengths are, to what we pick, and I would advise that as best as possible. You know, and him obviously, sort of being the owner's best manager at the time, you know, we'd normally agree. If we didn't, we'd discuss it why, and sometimes we'd go with me, sometimes we'd go with him, but it actually flowed quite well. It was just the motivational side was the bit that, you know, we both did, and then the tactical side, you know, I did this all by myself, really.
And Harry, you know, from someone that's been in the dressing room and played both sides, you know, what I mean by that is I've been the manager in the dressing room lots of times, and I've also been the assistant manager lots of times. They're two very different roles. So how did you find that when Glenn stood back and you then had to be the gaffer?
Yeah, very different. No, they're very different roles. For me, it was when I went from, you know, as an assistant, you're a little bit more of an ear to players, and you're a little bit more, sometimes they want to talk to you a bit more about in between, and you're probably a little bit closer. And that's sort of what I did when Glenn was more sort of the, you know, as a character, he's a bit more dominant figure. So I allowed that to happen because they need someone who's maybe not so much like that to get the balance. But once I took it over, I distanced myself quite quick. I think through experience, I find it quite easy to adjust my personality and suddenly keep my distance. And I would look for a way to gain that authority, you know, whether that's through looking for an issue or a problem to bring it up and see another side of me. And that's the bit I had to adjust quite quickly. That became from less of an ear and a bit more sterner with them. But it's something I've managed to do before. I've learned from past experiences. You need to change quite quickly and, you know, get someone else to do that side of it, really. So I managed just to sort of adapt it and just try and, you know, become a bit more of that sort of, when they need a rocket, they get it. And that's sort of, it's just adapting your personality, really. And, you know, they saw that side, especially last Saturday, to be honest.
You're absolutely right. They're two very different roles. So that done, and you're now in the manager's seat. What's Glenn's role within the side now?
Literally, yeah, nothing at all in terms of the playing side. After the Hendon game, as it was, which I know is one of Dave's old clubs, he doesn't have an input on the team. You know, I made it clear that if I was going to be taken out, I need to be judged on my decisions and my manner, and it's not something, you know, that I'd want to be influenced on, and not that I feel I can be. So, no, he sort of doesn't say any more than, you know, good luck, and as it is, I mean, since Hendon game, he's had no involvement in what team's played and who's come off and who's played and who's signed and who's gone, you know. I said to him at the time, I'm going to take it, then I need to take it, because at the end of the season, I'll be judged on the job I've done, and I've got to be responsible. So it's literally as an owner now, and, you know, working with the clubs and sponsors, and that is his clear role. He doesn't, on the football side, he hasn't been involved since then, so it's probably about 14 games ago.
Yeah, last one for me, Tim. You know, I think that's for the better of the football club. I've stated that all along, that I've never doubted Glenn Tomlin's desire to want Billericay to do well. But I did question him being in the dressing room and being the manager, just through, I didn't feel he was experienced enough to do that. I don't know Harry well at all, but I know of him. And I think at least he's in there, he's experienced, and I think if it stays that way, I wouldn't be surprised if they get promoted again next season, you know.
Have you been set a target for where you go for next season?
It's something we'll discuss. It was one of those things, you know, I was asked to discuss a week or 2 weeks ago, and I refused to until the job was done. I didn't want to preempt anything. It's one of those that, you know, he's hinted on things that the budget would come down briefly to make it a little bit more sustainable as we grow out of that league. If it does, you know, I'd have to keep a core of the players, and a core of those players are very good players, as we know, and sort of adapt, you know, to younger ones around it and lads, you know, with experience that maybe aren't of so much, you know, financially. And so I think, yeah, it could go again. It depends when we have these meetings of where the targets are. From what he sort of spoke about, temporary budget, you know, I would expect from my own ability to be around the playoffs minimum. It wouldn't be the biggest budget in the Conference South, but it also wouldn't be near the lowest, and I wouldn't be one to pretend that. So it'd be strong enough where I think if I back myself enough, it would be, you know, something I'd expect playoff wise. He hasn't given his expectations yet. He's hinted at, you know, the top half. But from that, I would always look to go more, really. And if it does stay that way, we've got a good chance.
First of all, congratulations. I think they've said that already, and I'm going to say that equally. A season, really, of self-publicity, some good, some indifferent, big-name players, ex-league, Premier League players, incidents on the pitch, off the pitch, good quality football, a manager in Glenn Tamplin being the manager, then not being the manager, then choosing to be something else, and then having board meetings where he decides to come back himself. Lots and lots of publicity throughout the season. Is next season going to be about football opposed to about Glenn Tamplin and about everything else and what people have classed as the circus around Billericay, when really the football should be the thing that does the talking?
I would hope so. I'm a football person, you know, I don't want it to be about anything else. It was not an interest. I look at it in a positive way, you know, as much as it was difficult. We can use his experience, not getting distracted, not getting in other people's opinions, you know. Twisting it as well, really, I found it was a good motivation. Anything negative we got, and obviously you get a lot of that, which is expected. We just used it as, I feel when players have got a point to prove, they're twice as good. So I used to spin it, and it's what I've used for a long time now. And I've mentioned things that have been said, and that we'd use it going out there to, at the end of the season, prove a big point to everyone and, you know, go and do what probably people didn't want us to do and go and win the three. So, hopefully next season it would just be about the football. The off-field stuff and that was understandable. It was tough this season. I've hinted that in interviews for many reasons. It's one of them where people probably would have said it was a given, you should win it, and you should have. But it was made difficult at times, and it's a bigger achievement, I think, than anyone will understand for those lads. And those the players, I couldn't speak highly enough, and they've been excellent.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned, you know, all the off the field things and the high expectations under Glenn. I mean, I'm looking at the website. The promotion party features Ray Lewis from the Drifters at the weekend, rather than the local DJ most clubs would have. So that sort of, you know, shows the mindset and where he wants to go. So it's on and off the field, but it's been a good thing as well, hasn't it? I mean, the way that club's developed in this season, you've probably seen massive changes off the field as well.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't even the pressure. I mean, because I don't think, look, if you want to play for something, there's always pressure, but it's not pressure in real life, is it? I mean, someone as a surgeon, same as someone's life, that's pressure. This is football, and, you know, you sort of take it in your stride, and it didn't affect me, the pressure of it, or if you don't go up, you lose your job. I didn't really take a second think of it, to be honest. It was more the side of, you know, the amount of games and the changeover in staff, and, you know, a lot of it made it difficult for the lads, and playing every other day and driving to games, you know, was tough. But that is what comes with, you know, being successful in the cups and being around. And we were in a privileged position financially that it's not something I'm moaning about. It's just I want people to realise how, you know, regardless of how good these players are and how much they've paid, they're, you know, they're human, and their attitude has been unbelievable and they've been immense. But the club, in terms of that, it's been excellent. I remember going to that club to play games there and thinking, you know, oh, I've got to go to Billericay tonight, play against them. And it wasn't something you look forward to. The ground wasn't great. You know, the pitch weren't great. And now it's unrecognisable. It's, you know, the other night was just under 2,000 there, and it felt like a much bigger league ground, and the support afterwards and the bar and we train at West Ham's training ground, so the facilities are, you know, good. And it's unbelievable turnaround. I mean, the image of the club now is miles better than it ever was. And I hope that keeps on that way, and it can stay as professional as possible, and it can, you know, keep being successful.
You mentioned the club image and that. There's plenty of outreach work being done as well. You know, sort of the community scheme and that seems to have made a massive step up. What's your role? Are you just focus on the first team, or do you get involved in that with your background when you were at Dagenham and Redbridge, for example?
I get involved briefly. I mean, I would like there to be a bigger pathway for it. You know, from as I said, from being there and being head of youth development there, that's a big sort of role to try and get players into the first team. And I'd like to do that here. We did find that, you know, the gap between was quite substantial. And that was hard with the 23s to have lads that had never really played to realistically go and get a place ahead of some of these boys that have come from two leagues lower, etc. But I get involved. I mean, as I said, there was a school visits today and two of the lads went with my assistant coach, Danny, and it's good for the community. And they're trying to make it a proper club that is sustainable without a big investment every, you know, week in, week out. That is their aim, because, you know, if at one point Glenn isn't there, you know, the club still wants to run with similar quality. So they're doing everything they can to treat it like a business and not just a football club. But mine, to be honest, over these last few weeks has mainly just been concentrating on the first team. I mean, we'd finish a game on a Tuesday night, and on a Wednesday I'd be sort of speaking to teams and managers and scout reports ready for Thursday. So we ended up playing 16 games in 33 days. So we had to. I didn't really have any time to focus on anything else, to be honest.
Hence why you got time to speak to me on a Thursday evening now, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's nice, you know. It was nice to not, you know, we'd normally be off to a game tonight or in a round, and I've loved every minute and go and play. You live to go and, you know, coach games, so it's excellent in that way. But it's the mental side of it to keep your standards high and keep pushing and pushing was a great, great experience, and it's a good thing to do. And, you know, I know there's less games in the league above and we don't have the extra cup, etc. So next season it might seem pretty quiet whether we've got something to play for or not. So,
well, thank you for your time, Harry. It's been fantastic finally talking to you, and it's been great to hear stuff from you and hear about the football. And you know, we wish, well, first of all, congratulations on the success, and we wish you well for next season, and hope to speak to you early in the new season.
No, thank you very much. Thanks all three of you, and appreciate that. Thank you.
How well did he come across?
Excellent, absolutely excellent. You know, confident. He just sounded like he knew what he was doing. He knew how to get it across. He knew how to deal with the circus act, you know, very much in his own stride. You know, he's a young manager. He's just won a league title. You know, they don't come around every day. And I genuinely hope that, and people think I've got a beef against Glenn Tomlin. I really don't. I think what Glenn Tomlin's done at Billerick, he's brilliant. My beef was that I don't think...
You didn't remember your name?
No, it wasn't even that. Listen,
I remember you.
I've got my name tattooed on my arm because I forget it. But it wasn't that. It was just that my thought was that people work hard to become managers, and they work hard to get experience to be managers. And he's within his rights to buy a club and do whatever he wants with it. But I just didn't like that. I didn't like that he came in to be the manager. And I always felt that had a chance of failure. If he's going to go into the boardroom and let Harry deal with that side of it, and they can work as a proper chairman and manager, I think it'll only go from strength to strength. Because the one thing that Glenn Tomlin's done is put his money where his mouth is. So I've never, my issue's been about him going in to be the manager. So, you know, that's, I wanted that cleared up. But, and you wonder when you hear the stories and you see the sort of videos that knock around, you wonder who could work with Glenn at times. But when you hear Harry talk, he could work with anyone.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, for me, you know, he came across very well. You know, it's the first time we've spoken to him. He's a successful manager now in his own right. But for me, it's been a huge circus this season. It's not been about Billericay Town, and that's the problem for me. The shine's taken off it somewhat because it's all been about Glenn Tomlin. Is he the manager? Is he not the manager? You know, it was a weekly scenario of what's going to happen next week at the football club. And to get through all that and still win the division is fantastic. The thing I would suggest with Harry is the fact that will it last in regards to Glenn? Will he be able to stay away from the dressing room? Because obviously he's really enjoyed it in parts when it was going really, really well. He's had some, you know, Premier League players playing at that standard of football. And to be honest, I know Harry said, you know, they're only footballers and they're only human and they're only, you know, earning probably about 10 times more than anybody else in the division individually. And you know what? If they hadn't won the league, it would have been a travesty, really, because with the calibre of players they had. I mean, it's like South Shields. South Shields have won the division. They've got Julia Arca plays, so he's 37 years of age now, and he's outstanding. But imagine if they had six Julia Arcas in the team. You know, people would be questioning it a lot more, saying, you know, they've got six ex-professional league, international or Premier League footballers that are played in the season in a division right down. I think it's good for Billy Ricketts.
They're entitled to do that.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, they're entitled to do that.
Yeah, of course they are. Don't get me wrong. They're entitled to do it, and I'm entitled to give my opinion in the fact that I just don't think it's... I don't think it's good for semi-pro football in any way, shape, or form. I think it's at the higher ends of the semi-pro game, you know, perhaps. But I think he starts setting precedents where people are getting and afforded huge wages. You know, the demands of the semi-pro footballer is very, very different from what it once was. And you know, it's going to come a time when the semi-pro game from Conference down to Northern Premier League and its equivalents across the country are all going to be primarily professional leagues rather than semi-pro leagues. But they've done a good job, and he sounded and he came across very, very well. I would hope that they don't have the circus next season. I would hope that the television cameras leave them alone. And Glenn himself says, look, we don't want this. You know, we're in the community now. We're doing all this work. We want to be a football club. He has to keep a low profile, and I think if he's not in the dressing room and he's at the board level, he can do that. Billy Ricky stand a chance of being successful again next season. But you don't need circuses around your football club. You might have it for you know, an FA Cup run or something like that, but for not an entire season, or in fact nearly two seasons. Yeah.
Well, it's like Harry said, you know, you'd go to Billericay Town on, or even on a Saturday, not even a cold Tuesday night, and you didn't like it. It wasn't the greatest place to go with that pitch. And it was a bit ramshackle, and without all that other media hype around it, what has taken place there at that club? All the transformation off the field with facilities, but also that branding and that working with the community and that sort of thing. It's a fantastic story, and more clubs should do what's gone on there. Obviously you need the money, but you know, it is, at least, although there's money being spent on wages, there is money being spent elsewhere as well, where, you know, in other clubs we've seen it just go on the field and then everything's left to rack and ruin. At least it's a property investment.
Oh yeah, and I think what Swampy's saying is, if Glenn sort of steps back, then everybody will get to hear the story. But while Glenn's in the forefront and sort of conducting himself like he did at times, he'll always be the story. So I think that's a fair point that Swampy's making. Step back and let people see your success.
Let Billericay be Billericay Football Club. You don't the ego of one individual, or as much work as you might do, and as much money you pump into a football club and improve it massively, if that ego outweighs what they're doing, they're never going to be recognised as what Glenn wants them to be. A well-run, good community football club. So he's got to look at the last season and look at the things that he's done very, very well, look at the mistakes that have been made, and make sure going forward at the football club is about football rather than about Glenn. And hopefully... you know, he's probably learned a lot of lessons, and I'm sure he has learned a lot of lessons. I just hope they don't keep singing in the dressing room that wonderful song that they always sing all through the season.
No guess for this one, but I did try, but all become clear. I wanted to give time to discuss some of the many permutations for promotions and relegations, and I'm sure I've got, you know, my calculator may have been offset, and I might not be able to read my script properly, so there's no doubt someone going to pull me up on something that I've got slightly wrong. But for many, it is the last weekend of the main season. There are many permutations, even now, who goes up, who makes the playoffs, who goes down, and a quick rundown of some of those. National League, Macclesfield already confirmed as champions, heading for the Football League. There's Tranmere, Sutton, Aldershot, they're already confirmed for the playoff spots. Ebbsfleet, Fylde, Boreham Wood and Dover chasing the last three spots. And already confirmed as relegated from the National League, Torquay United, Chester and Guiseley, with Woking currently in the fourth relegation spot, but they still have Barrow in their sights. And the National North, Salford City have been crowned title winners. Playoffs already beckon for Harrogate Ascot Town, Brackley Town, Kidderminster Harriers, Stockport County and Chorley, Bradford Park Avenue and Spennymoor Town are those with a chance for the last spot. Meanwhile, Gainsborough Trinity, Tamworth and North Ferriby United are already confirmed in the relegation spots. And in the National South, haven't and Waterlooville and Dartford are still battling out for the title, haven't with a 3-goal advantage with the points all square. In the playoffs, with whoever finishes second are Hampton and Richmond Borough, Chelmsford City and Hemel Hempstead Town. The last two playoff spots to be claimed by either Truro City, Braintree Town or St Albans City. Relegation spots have already been confirmed for Whitehall and Bognor Regis Town. Poole Town currently sit in the third relegation spot but can swap places with Hungerford Town depending on the final day results. Now in the Northern Premier, Altrincham are already crowned champions. Sutton Coldfield Town confined to the single relegation spot. Isthmian Premier Billericay Town, we've spoken to Harry there, have secured the title, whilst at the other end the relegation scramble will go to the final day with Burgess Hill Town and Tooting and Mitcham United facing massive games this weekend. Meanwhile, in the Southern Premier, Hereford, we heard last week, have the title already in the bag, and at the other end there's still a chance for Gosport Borough to escape relegation and send Dunstable Town down on the final day. Now, chaps, that's a very quick rundown.
Well done.
I hold my hands up for any mistakes there. But I've left out the playoffs and the steps below because, well, I still don't even know what's going on. We know that with the reorganisation, the best third place side on points per game over the season across the six step four divisions will get automatic promotion. At the moment, that is likely to be Hyde United in the Northern Premier Division 1 North. They're averaging way over 2 points per game. They're ahead of the game. But this is where it becomes interesting, especially for my club, Hazelmere United. Now, Thurrock have obviously tendered their resignation from the Isthmian Premier, leaving a space at step three with and only one relegation spot at that level in each of the divisions. And the FA have previously suggested that at least one relegation will need to happen in each division, which means another club from step four will need to be promoted. Thus, you'd think it's probably the next best third place club at that level, which could, depending on results, be my club. Now, I had chased the FA today for some clarity on how the rules are to be interpreted, who by and when. And unfortunately, all I was given was that an announcement would be given in due course.
Quarter past five on Saturday. I just had some information before I came on air from the FA in regards to Hyde and Scarborough. South Shields have won the division, the Northern Premier Division, in the Northern Prem Division 1 North. South Shields have won the league, and Hyde and Scarborough were the two teams that should be going up. But the FA had said that we can't actually officially announce it because, as you say, if a club decides not to take part in next season or they come out of the division, do those points get taken away from them? However, I've been told if this show isn't going out live and it's going out tomorrow, that Hyde and Scarborough will be indeed promoted as the top two and three. And it depends, actually, because Hyde could finish third and Scarborough could finish second. But they've both done enough. But you're right, it's very, very confusing. It's very difficult to understand. The way things transpire with the FA leaving it to the very last minute is baffling. But I think it all becomes apparent and clear at 5:15 on Saturday.
And actually, that's where it becomes even more confusing because it's still not clarification of the full position. Because, as you rightly say, in that Northern Premier First Division North, you've got South Shields be promoted as champions. It looks like Scarborough will then be promoted as the second place automatic promotion, and Hyde United as the third best points per game club at step four will get final automatic promotion place. But that doesn't solve the issue of Thurrock withdrawing from step three, which means that there's an extra hole in step three which needs to be filled probably by a step four club. So taking my own club, for example, if there's no announcement before the weekend's final games in relation to this matter, nor before next weekend's planned playoffs, everybody's going to have to prepare for the playoffs and go ahead with them. But all the time, effort and expense may then be pointless anyway. So looking at the Southern League, South East Division, for example, Hartley-Whitney at the moment, they win on Saturday, they'll finish third and become the second best points per game as a third place club for step four. So then effectively, if there was a space to be filled, backfilled where Thurrock have gone, then, you know, they should go, into that spot. But if they've got to play in the playoffs, without having that decision, that means that, the rules at the moment say that if any sides leave the competition, then their place will be taken by the losing playoff finalists with the best points per game ratio. And that's where it gets very bizarre. So if we, hopefully everybody's following this, if we, Hayes and Yedding United, win this Saturday, we are then likely to become the third best points per game at step four. So the second best and the third best points per game from the same division. So we go into those playoffs, we get a home draw in the playoffs, hopefully we win the semi-final on Wednesday, then Bank Holiday Monday, play host to the other semi-finalists, which going to form will probably be Hartley Whitney. So again, you've got the two sides with the second and the third best points per game at step four playing each other in a divisional playoff match. We then play the playoff final, and the winner gets automatic playoff promotion for that division, the third place, as all the divisions will get. But if the rules are then applied as suggested above, the empty spot will then be allocated to the losing finalist across all the step with the most points per game over the season at step four, which in this scenario will be us or Hartley Whitney, whoever's lost that playoff final, in which case the whole playoff final will have been completely irrelevant anyway, all hypothetical and perhaps wishful thinking on my part. But if things go to form, it's going to happen. Now, I appreciate it's complicated and nobody could have foreseen the various implications months ago, but surely if they make a decision now, ahead of the weekend, or make an announcement now, it avoids all these complications and criticisms. And of course, there's the merger of Ossett Town and Ossett Albion, as we covered previously, becoming Ossett United at step four, which adds to the knock-on of an extra club being needed from step five, where again, if the rules are applied as read, will probably mean that the top two from each step five division will be promoted. But again, I don't think there's been any full clarification. There's so many ramifications and things needing clarification, and I just couldn't get an answer from the FA. There's been various things bandied about on social media and even in the last hour, but I can't get an official announcement. I don't want to go with something that I've read it on the message board until I can clarify it. And you know, hopefully, maybe by the time people listen to this, there may be clarification out there, and this rant may have been complete no reason whatsoever, or it could mean that my club and or any other club could be heading towards a playoff that may not even be needed.
This way you're talking about that, it'd be wrong of me not to congratulate Westfield, who won the Combined Counties, a division that I'm in with Chertsey. That we spoke to the manager a couple of weeks ago, Tim, didn't we?
We did.
And I think, you know, when we're talking about people who have won their championship, then it'd be wrong of me not to congratulate Westfield.
Well, there's another club as well that we have to talk about just quickly. One is Gainsborough. They've never been relegated or promoted, never been relegated. I think, in fact, I'm promoted for 140 years, and it's the first relegation the club is suffering there, leaving the Conference North, so National League North this season. The first time. And another club that we had on the show a few months ago in the Scottish, the second round of the Scottish FA Cup, was Cove Rangers.
Yeah.
We were talking to them, and they've won their division as well. So they've won the Highland League. They're based up in Aberdeen, aren't they? And well done to them. They're champions of their division as well. So it's nice to see the guys that we speak to have done very, very well.
We obviously picked them early. and of course we haven't even discussed there the possibility of Sutton United still making those playoffs and then having to rip up their 3G pitch, which nothing's moved forward on.
Listen, how topical is that? I actually played on it on Monday night. Chertsey played Sutton Common Rovers, who in a quarter final of a cup game, and they ground share with Sutton. So I've actually had. Well, my team play on it. It's excellent. It's an excellent surface. You know, we lost 1-0 to a team who are third in our division. I thought it was a good game, but the surface is excellent. You know, I'm always banging my drum about it, but really, you've got to go and see a game at Sutton to see how like grass it is. Honestly, yeah, so
the same at Hyde, Dave. We played in the cup final there on Tuesday, and I've been to Hyde on probably 30 or 40 occasions over the last few seasons, and it's like a 4G. It's near as dammit grass. They played in the FA Cup there on it, and it was. And what was interesting that night, the pundits who know everything about football, you know, the higher ends of football, not like what we talk about, were complaining about the pitch, saying it wasn't particularly good. It was absolutely outstanding, and it's an outstanding ground and a standing pitch. And I'm changing my mind. If we can get quality like that, then it will save a lot of clubs. But as we said here, we saw in United, if they do get promoted, they've said they will rip it up, haven't they? Anyway, that's what the chairman has said. We will do it under duress. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
So let's celebrate some more champions. Again, much in the media, much fancy from the off, but that left much to do, and do it they have. Good evening, Salford City. Joint manager Anthony Johnson and National League North title winner. Winner, even.
That sounds good. Good evening.
Yeah, well, good evening to you. Now, was it more pressure than you've had at any other point in your career elsewhere?
Yes, 100%. And I think that comes because we went full-time last year. And obviously, it becomes your livelihood. Obviously, me and Bernard both give up full-time, decent paid jobs for the opportunity. So I think once it becomes your job, paying the bills, feeding the kids, all that type of stuff, the pressure intensifies massively. Also added to the fact that we missed out last year in the playoffs. Sort of part of the club's or the owner's business plan was 2 years at each level. This is our second year for the first time. So the pressure was really on to win promotion. So definitely felt it this year, yeah.
And the National League next. I mean, look at the clubs dropping out this year. Names like Torquay United and Chester. It's already a very tough competition. Do you have enough to compete straight off, or is it a busy summer signing new players?
I think sides with momentum, like Fylde did last year, and even Halifax to a point, who then finishing quite safely in the table. I think momentum gets you so far, but I think you always need to add that bit of quality. You know, we're always looking to improve. This time last year, or even earlier than that, we sort of started the recruitment process for this league that we just won. And we knew sort of the teams that were coming in, that we had to be a lot more physical, a lot more experienced, a lot more athletic. And that's got us out of this division, but you know, we've highlighted that, especially with the promotion now to the National League of the side in there. We need that bit more quality in certain areas of the pitch. So we're already ongoing with that.
And what do you think is going to be the big difference in that next level up? Well, obviously, there's greater travel, but does it need a different physical attributes, a different mindset?
Yeah, I think, listen, we're used to winning a lot of games. You know, we've been there for 3.5 years. We've had 3 promotions. And we've had the playoff defeat on penalties. So we're used to winning games, winning to the unknown as managers, but also, you know, as a football club. But what we've got with the lads that are already there, we've got UBM Owen, who goes for the streets with Lewis Maynard, and other players that are living, all playing this level of football. Me and Bernard out, you know, 2-3 times a week trying to watch this level of football, whether it be live at the games, whether it be on BT Sport, which we're quite fortunate, you know, to see, or whether it be on Y Scout and all the different other platforms. So we're watching loads of games. I genuinely think, in terms of physicality, that type of stuff, there isn't a big difference between the two leagues from what I've seen so far. But I think the organisation of sides, you know, obviously a better standard of pitches and grounds and bigger crowds and all that type of stuff is obviously there. But I think the organisation side of things for the teams is much higher from what we've seen. We don't get too many high scoring games in that sense. It seems a lot of sides seem to be built from the back forward, as opposed to it being the other way around. So, you know, as I said, we've highlighted that we're going to have certain quality in certain areas of the pitch, definitely.
Now, I think Swampy's got a question, and this could be interesting. I may have to interpret.
Well, first of all, I just want to say, Jono, congratulations to yourself and Bernard and Salford City Football Club for another promotion. A lot of hard work on the pitch all season. It's been a tough old league campaign. A number of clubs in and around you, Kidderminster and certainly Harrogate, pushed you all the way. It's not surprising that they're also full-time as well. you've taken the step, and Bernard, obviously, now to be full-time managers. You're also working alongside the likes of Chris Casper, who I'm sure you'd like to give great credit to as well. But my question is, when you were going through a slightly indifferent patch early in the season, why did you have to take Tom Walker off us? Why did you have to steal our best player, who went on and actually has been your talisman for the rest of the season?
I think we had a run of games around sort of a Boxing Day, or just before Boxing Day, actually, just before Christmas against Charlie. And then we played FC United twice. We had Stockport and another game where we didn't win five. Now, out of them games, we drew three and lost two, deservedly so at FC, and we got a pacing at Charlie. And I think, honestly, I believe that we almost became a victim of our own success. And what I mean by that is because we had such an amazing first 20 games where we lost one game. I think we went on the 12 game unbeaten run and stretched open a gap. I think when we didn't win them for those five games, or should I say, lost two to five, it almost looked like a lot worse of a rut than actually what it was. There were mitigating circumstances around that time as well, where we had Scott Burton sent off against FC, as he well knows, and against Dolly as well, he got sent off. So there were one or two little things that probably just went against us a little bit, but we didn't panic. There was no issues for us where we thought it was sort of moving away from us. I think a similar sort of time was just before that. Brackley and Harrogate were both themselves going through poor runs. In fact, they both struggled against FC away from home as well. So it was just a bit of a patch around the season where the pitch was starting to change, and everyone was getting like them dodgy results. Luckily for us, we were able to bring in Tom, as you said, Tom from FC United. And the kid's been a breath of fresh air. How he's still not playing in the Football League, whether, you know, he was at Bolton, went to Bury, he's beyond me, because the ability of the kid is absolutely frightening. And he changed the dynamic, you know, to our team, because we, like I said, we were quite rigid and quite organised in how we played. Tom gave us something totally different. And we also signed Nick Horton, who was alone at Charlie. Who was signed from Cleveland. They both gave us different dynamics to the team and the way we could have that plan B. Tom was obviously non-contract at FC United, so for us it was a no-brainer to go and get the kid and hopefully start preparing back towards where he should be. But I honestly believe I've not seen anything as good as that in only football as Tom Walker at the moment in time. I know he's probably absolutely gutted down at FC that we took him, you know, yeah, away from that. Actually, they went on a bad run of form themselves FC after that, but picked up again and had a decent end. But he's been an absolute best of fresh air for us, and one I honestly believe will be back at the top level.
Now, I think Dave's got a question as well.
Well, obviously, congratulations to him as well. You know, it's a great achievement. My question, and I'll just cut the chase, is have they found the difference in being full-time? Obviously, massive pluses, but if you could just go through a couple of them, and is there any negatives about it?
No, I think if you start with negative, there's no negative to it. I suppose what it does do is it changes, especially being in a mainly part-time league in which we've just won. The pressure, again, what we talked about before, we knew straight away there's only one outcome for us as managers, and we have to win promotion this season, especially if we're going full-time. But I think with that, the time aspect is the obvious one. You know, not just what you get on the on the training ground, because actually there's a couple of sides, like I think Stockport and Telford, who do this sort of hybrid programme where I think they're in 3 nights a week. But when you sort of start to add up the hours that they're doing on the training ground, it isn't too different from what we do. The biggest difference is the recovery side of things. So when these teams are training on a Tuesday, Tuesday and a Thursday night, whatever it be, they then have to go to work the day after. We can put our lads through whatever programme it may be, and then they're resting. So the big thing for us, obviously, is the recovery side of it, where they're not going into work. But also with that, and we know we're quite lucky with this, but we've got full-time sports scientists, and we have an analyst as well who goes watching the games, and we have that sort of department where we can work with different things. I remember the Cowleys talking about it last season, that we used quite a lot, the huddle. We also have that, so them little bits of tools that you get given that you don't normally get at part-time level are there on top of that. So there's so many different little tools that we've been given. It's been nothing but, you know, I can't it's our dream. It was our dream set, you know, when we started out 9 years ago to be full-time football managers, and to be doing it now, you know, it's absolutely amazing. But it's definitely, I think, the biggest thing is the time and the contact with the players, and obviously the time that they get to recover from training and games.
And you're obviously living the dream now. You're a full-time manager. You've achieved that title, and that. And how great is it to be alongside your mate as well as a joint manager? Does it help to have that dynamic so that someone can take the flak for the day and you can just step away a little bit?
Yeah, obviously every manager has a right man, whether it be assistant manager, head coach, or whatever. We're quite lucky that we're both joint managers. You know, I know people still question what it is and how it works and things like that, but we're just so lucky that we're best mates off the pitch. And at times it might not even be 50-50. It might be a day where it's 8-20 in his favour, and he just might drive it. And it's having that implicit trust between the two of us where we can have days like that. You know, it might be something he sees on the training ground or during the game that he wants to work on the day after, and vice versa. We plan the sessions together and deliver it, you know, along with a coach. So, you know, when you sort of, the days after the winning the leagues and promotions, and you sit down with your pal, you're having a beer, whatever you do, you sort of, it's like anything else with your pals. Anything you do with your mates, and that sense of pride is extended even more, I suppose. You know, we're very, very close. We've discussed this before, but to do it with your best pal, it's the best feeling you can ever hope for. You know, it's not one of them things where a manager changes their assistant manager in a couple of years. We've been together 9 years, and people are always questioning how does it work, and you know, what if an offer came in for one of you? That'll never happen. It'll never change the way we work. We're obviously acutely aware of that. Things like wages and stuff are always split down the middle, but I'd rather be doing it that way than doing it on my own.
And you mentioned the owners, and you're ahead of the plan already, but they must be pleased with the way everything is moving along. Yeah, the project's been shown to work, really. How hands-on are they, and do you think they may change now that you're one step away from the Football League?
Potentially. Look, they set out there. What they call it, the business plan, when it took over in 2014, we came in 6 months after, and part of their business plan was that they wanted promotion as a minimum every 2 years. So obviously we've got to the National League in four, so essentially we're probably 2 years ahead of where they planned on being. But that, you can just end up being a victim of your own success. That doesn't mean they've now got 4 years to get out of this league. You know, I think you're spot on in the sense of, I think things will start to accelerate. You know, and that goes with me and Bernard, where, look, if things aren't moving right on the pitch, then sentiment doesn't come into it. You know, that's with players, that's with me and Bernard. They want to get to a certain point. I've always said it, and we say it to them, you know, Salford's ambitions don't outweigh mine and Bernard's. You know, we want to go to the top of the game. Hopefully it's with Salford, but if it's not, no problem. But our ambitions are as equally as high as Salford's, if not higher. So I think it's a perfect match in that sense, that we push each other, talk about pressure. No, they can't put any more pressure than what we've got on ourselves. So all that type of stuff is always there. It's always in the background. And, you know, as I said to you there, we're acutely aware that things might start to move at a quicker pace now. Now we've got to the National League. But I think if we go in there thinking we can just roll our way through like we had perhaps in the past, then we could get a massive, massive culture shock.
Well, thank you as ever for your time, Anthony. It's always a pleasure to speak to you.
Good man. Speak soon. Take care. Bye.
Great, great, great for Salford City. You know, I think as a football club, the ground itself now has developed hugely. They've deserved to win the division because they're the top team. Yes, they've spent a lot of money. They've no doubt got players on a lot of money as well. That's my only concern. That's always my concern with any of this, where clubs like Salford come along and with a project like Billericay, and because they're playing their players big wages, there's a trickle-down effect, you know, on other clubs to try and in some way replicate as best they can wages amongst the divisions, and it's very, very difficult. But you can't question the project that the Nevilles and Nicky Butt and Paul Scholes have come up with. Bernard and Jono are doing their UEFA B licence at the moment with the two of the FC United coaches. You know, I can see them. And as my dad says, who's an Irish Salfordian, he said, look, he's been living in the UK most of his life now rather than living in Ireland. And he grew up in Salford. He said Salford's a city, and every city should have a Football League club. And as far as he's concerned, Salford
are on the right path to do that. And I can see them possibly in 2 to 3 seasons, maybe even next season, because the money will be available and the right kind of player will be available. They could well be a Football League club before very, very before long, and fair play to them.
He did sound very relaxed, didn't he? More relaxed than I think even when we spoke to him earlier on the season. So obviously the pressure does take its toll. Will they be under even more pressure next year in the National League?
I think that it's one of them clubs. It reminds me a lot of Wimbledon. You know, they're a juggernaut, you know, and there'll always be pressure around the job, and people will sort of say that's down to the owners, but it's down to the fact that of the success the owners have had themselves, and they've seen enough success to know how it's done, and it's proven to be right. Not everyone can handle that, but to be fair to Jono and Bernard, they've certainly shown that they can. The TV series has been a revelation. I've really enjoyed it. But I'm sure that if there is none this year, the two of them will be happy about that. We can get on with normal football management. But it's a big ask to keep repeating success, especially when you're going up divisions. You know, it's a massive ask, and they've achieved it, you know, and you have to sort of, you have to credit them for that. You know, that's much harder than people think. It's hard to be successful in the same division every year, never mind jump one. So I wish them well, because we spoke to him a couple of times. He's come across as a good guy, and I love good guys to do well.
Yeah, well, I mean, they are generally open and honest lads. They wear the, you know, shirt of the sleeve and all the rest of it. They know what they want to achieve in football, and you know, as he said himself, they're living a dream. I mean, you know, the full time managers, they go into work every day and kick a football about every single day of the week, not just, you know, a couple of training sessions. They've got a good team around them. They've got all the attributes and all the qualities that you need to take a football club going forward. Obviously, like I say, and I see where you're coming from in the regards of like Wimbledon, the juggernaut of Wimbledon, and now the juggernaut of Salford City. Obviously, two entirely different models. You know, your club for me, showing football can be achieved in the, you know, through fan ownership and in a superb model. Salford doing it in a totally different way, but the same token, you know. They're putting, you know, things back into the community, and they've done very, very well. And they've got two guys that I say are working class lads that they've backed to the hilt, and they'll do it next season again. And they do get quite a lot of input from the likes of Gary Neville, Phil. I know Phil in the past has put on, I spoke to one of the previous assistant manager of the football club, and he said to have Phil Neville down there doing a training session. So it was just invaluable. You can learn more in 20 minutes of him doing a little drill than you can learn reading your manuals or actually just, you know, watching a game of football. And so they've got all that, and that's a big, big plus.
Thank you, Dave, and thank you, Swampy, for joining me.
No problem at all.
Thank you to all our guests and of course for everybody listening. Hopefully everybody will be back next week as well. Don't forget, you can find us throughout the season on Audio Boom, on iTunes, Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, and you can put our podcast on your website. Check out www.nonleaguefootballshow.com for the embeddable player. Thank you and goodbye.
J-I-B-B-A-J-A-B-B-A.